Welcome to the teaching ministry of Pastors Carl and Cheryl Thomas. Our favorite verse is Habakkuk 2:14, "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." Consumed by that revelation, we are committed to recognizing, resourcing, and releasing high-impact ministries resulting in global glory, transforming lives to impact their world. We have a teaching that will impact you today. Now, let's get right into that word.
Okay, so this morning, I have a book table. I don't have much left there, but I wanted to just, before I get into the message, this is part of it, and we have a short message today because it's a Sunday morning, but, you know, it just goes a little slower, a little shorter. So it's only 3 hours instead of six. This is my book, The Non-Religious Guide to Dating and Being Single, and I've had a few parents buy it for their teenagers, which I call it a PG-18 book, not because there's anything inappropriate in it, but when your kid's like 16, you're trying to define boundaries with them, and you're trying to tell them what not to do. But when your kid's like 32 and not married, you're trying to get them to date anybody. You're like, eHarmony looks really good, babe. You know, like, why don't you go, you know, Match.com isn't that bad. You know, so I've had so many parents who will come up to me, and their kid's 16, and they're like, "You're giving them too much freedom." And I'm like, your kid's not 40 and not married yet. When they're 40, you're going to come back and be like, "I want 10 of those books. I'm going to put them everywhere in their rooms and in their house." Because so many people in the church don't have dating intelligence. So this book imparts dating intelligence, and it helps people to understand what they want and who they are. Instead of making a list of their dream person, it helps them to decide who they want to be, which is really good. But I did one chapter called Disney Romance, which I haven't been sued by Disney yet. So hopefully I never will be. And, you know, like I talk about Cinderella syndrome. Someday my prince will come. You know, one of my friends, an amazing woman, has been praying for her wedding since she was four. She had her hope chest, her photo album full of wedding plans, the names of her children picked out, the rooms in her house pre-planned and decor down to the last detail. It even involved hunter green and burgundy walls from the 80s. I guess she locked this ugly style in from a bad era. Her journals packed full of things that she would talk to her soon-to-be husband about, and pretty much everything she needed except the man to share it with. She lived in the fantasy of marriage so long in her romance, but never even had gone to a school dance with a guy. As a matter of fact, she made her plans known to all her closest girl and guy friends, telling them what Mr. Right might look like and how romantic he was going to be with her. She was socially awkward around potential guys because she had made herself fundamentally unpursuable. She was waiting for a perfect Prince Charming. She would know when he would show up. Therefore, she was single into her late 30s. At one point, she was so disappointed that she came to us for prayer. I felt we needed to have a book burning of all the plans she had made because they were floating around in Cinderella's castle of her mind, far, far outside the truth of a real relationship. She had so much control over her fantasy, there was no room for reality in it anymore. And so I take each of the Disney stories and ruin them like that and then give some keys to, like let's look at realistic relationship. I mean, it's like realistic relationship is so much more beautiful than fantasy. Like I used to watch with my sisters, they'd make me watch all the romantic comedies, and I would look at them and just be like, this is so stupid, it's not real. I mean, it's fun, right? It's fun. But then I married a romantic comedy. And the truth is far better than the fiction, for sure. And I feel like, you know, it's just time for us to really grab hold of truth. So the book is written to especially people who grew up in a church or a religious place, or they were taught under Bill Gaither or something like that, and they need freedom. And so I have a chapter called I Kissed Dating Goodbye, But Then I Asked It Out Again. And my book worked for me. Look at her. So who's single on a dating journey? Yeah, in the back, come on up. This is for all ages. I've had so many people of all ages ask me. This is for you. God bless you. That book. She says she's never dated or had a boyfriend in her entire life. She needs the book. I love that. I have family like that are like right now entering into, you know, dating relationships. And there's this one guy who put out a blog, an article, a Christian, he put out a secular article, and he hadn't dated. And so he went on 12 first dates on eHarmony and just decided, I'm going to go on 12 just relationship, friendship dates so I can just get used to going out with somebody for the purpose of, you know, being attractive and being attracted to somebody and see what happens. He's a Christian, and that sounds so offensive to some Christians because they're like, why don't you just pray? Well, after you're 45 years old, it's nice to use tools that are out there and skills that are out there, you know? And so he went out and he went on by the third date, he met a girl that he thought was amazing, but he was doing it for like a series. He was writing an article, so he had to do all, you know, 12. And the third date, he met somebody. And by the 12th date, he learned how to pursue her because he went out with 12 different women and he learned what women were wanting. He'd never done it before. And so he went back and pursued number three, and they got married. I mean, I think that's awesome. We need more of that. So I want to talk to you guys today. I like the word shine, and it's one of my messages that probably one of my life messages is about the favor of God. I love the favor of God. Don't you love being friends with somebody who has like an awesome resource, like your best buddy has a boat? Isn't that nice? Like you're like, hey, want to hang out this weekend? Which what you're really saying is, let's go play on your boat, right? Like, you know, we have friends that have different resources, and we don't use them because we're friends, and friends just use each other anyways, but in a right way. There's a give-take relationship. But it's nice when someone has a resource. Now, in Hollywood, there's people who, they have entourages, and their entourages are people who professionally travel with them to use them for their resources. And I want to be a part of an entourage. I'm waiting for somebody to ask me, and I was asked to be a chaplain. I don't really want to be a part of one, but I was asked to be a chaplain for a famous musician at one point, and I would have just traveled and eaten at five-star, you know, resort-type hotel restaurants and prayed with this team every morning. I was like, what a glorious life. Get paid really well to go stay at five-star hotels, go to concerts, meet with all kinds of celebrities, pray for people, prophesy to people. And I was like, that's glory. That's like, you know, like when you have a friend who has a resource and they can bring you into it, and they could bring you into the wealth of that. I mean, how amazing is that? I mean, have you ever had somebody who, you know, they have something really nice, like a timeshare or something, and you got to go with them and benefit from that? You are that person. You have a resource that when the world gets around you, if you learn how to access the resource that you have, your friends will feel like they've won the friendship lottery. I feel that way with some of our friends. I feel that way with Sheree. I've won the friendship and the marriage lottery because my friends know how to access the resources that they're called to. They understand the favor that's on their life. Now, the word favor in the Old and New Testament, I'm really bad with words, but in the New Testament, it's like, as far as Greek and Hebrew words, but the New Testament is called koine. The Old Testament, I can't even pronounce it. But it means the same thing in Greek and Hebrew, the words that are used for the word favor. It also means blessing. It also means grace. Like grace means making complicated things simple. It also means abundantly more than everybody else. It also means more than you could ever steward in your lifetime. That's what favor means. And when you look at favor, the person who had the most favor besides Jesus in the Bible was Job. And we don't think of Job in the good light. We think of like when someone's reading Job, we're like, stay away from me, stay away from me. You're afflicted. But like when you think of Job in a good way, Job 29, it's pretty amazing because he says, oh, I long for the days. And he describes what it was like to walk in the fullness of favor. It's one of my favorite scriptures. And he says, a light shone on me all the days. Everywhere I walked, it was like a spotlight was on me. This is before the acting industry came. We know what a spotlight is now. But and he was talking about the illumination. He felt like he was always clear, always present with his opportunities, always engaged in life. That's what he described favor as. And, you know, now we see, like, actors who have favor. Like, in one generation, in the last 100 years, we've had the arts entertainment have destroyed the caste system in every nation. Did you know that? So in England, there's, like, footballers, which is actually soccer. I don't know why they call it football, because America actually coined the term football, I think. We are the football players, you know. But these footballers, these soccer players, all of a sudden have more power and more money than the Queen. They could say something in society, and the youth generation will listen to him. And maybe the older people are like, yeah, the queen is the final word. But the youth generation will listen to something that they, a statement that they make. And they came from the streets. And that was like completely uncommon for a common person who came from nothing to actually have power in finances, resources, or politics. And all of a sudden you have like, you know, Beckham and like all these different people who have more power than some of the civil authorities. That's amazing. In one generation, you had that happen in just the last 50 years for England. It's happened in America since the film industry was produced. And this is very rare. Like in 100 years, we're watching people who have like a light, literal light following them because they have cameras and paparazzi. And we live in LA, you know, like we are all the time around filmings. All the time you're driving down the street, like we'll have friends visit. And they're like, oh, they're filming. What's going on? And we're like, that's like every moment of every day here. We're like, we're so used to seeing cameras on a corner and people walking and doing their scene. We don't think a thing of it. We're used to seeing people with paparazzi. As a matter of fact, when I lived in Hollywood itself, because we live 7 miles east now of Hollywood, but I lived, my Starbucks was a Starbucks that like tons of celebrities went to. And I would go there in the mornings and just get a coffee, just to walk down with my dog, get a coffee. I remember one time, my first time, because I had just moved there, my first time I was standing in line and Tim Allen was there. And I don't get starstruck very often, but when people have a light on them and they have illumination on them, you know, just from society, like, and you grew up watching a, you know, man show, he's like a man's man. So he's like, and I'm looking at him, he goes, "You want to do it, don't you?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was like, and we just did it in line together for like the whole time we were in line for 5 minutes. And everybody was laughing around us that we were doing grunts at each other, the Tim Allen grunts, you know, like, and it was just, you know, one of those moments where we've seen paparazzi stalk, like Jessica Alba one time was in a restaurant with her and there's like 50 paparazzi outside waiting for her to just come out. And I thought, the poor girl, you know, she can't even eat her meal, but she kind of probably secretly loved it. You know, it's narcissism of Hollywood. But you are the reality star of heaven. All of the angels and the Holy Spirit, Jesus and the Father, and all the cloud of witnesses watch you more than you watch Survivor. They watch you more than Big Brother. They watch you more than you watch any show you watch. You are literally like the object of the desire of heaven. And heaven is watching you to see what you'll do next because angels don't know. They don't know what you have the capacity to choose. They don't know what decision you'll make. You are like an enigma to them because they have no idea why he chose you the way he chose you. And even the cloud of witnesses are like, what are they going to do? Are they going to take on the full invitation? And you have a party, just like there's a party whenever someone gets saved in heaven. You know how that scripture says in Matthew that the angels celebrate in heaven? Think about every time you advance the purpose of God forward, there's a party going on that's better than a rave. It's better than any other kind of party you can imagine. There's a party over your littlest decisions. Like they're going, yes, they did it. Because heaven knows that your little decisions are never insignificant and your little decisions cause big ripples. They cause big impact. And so heaven is literally watching you and angels are marveling at you to figure out, like they'd like to be around you just to see what you'll do next. It's not like they have to be around you like, oh, dang it, I have to be around this person. I'm assigned here. I'd rather be in heaven where the glory is. You are the glory of heaven. And angels want to be around you because they're curious, especially the more you tap into that resource of being a son or a daughter of God, they want to be around you because they're amazed that you co-create with God. You have to realize you're waiting to be obedient, like, God, maybe he'll talk to me to talk to somebody today. And once you start to understand the resource of the kingdom of heaven inside of you, you start to operate like Jesus, where you're no longer dependent on God to lead you as a voice. But you have a nature. 2 Peter 1:4 says the divine nature of Christ is inside of you, and you get to participate with it. So something inside of you starts to feel what's not in alignment with heaven and what can come and the potential and the capacity that humans have to receive God. And you'll start to do things that surprise heaven around you. Because you'll start to operate like Jesus. I think all of heaven was like, I mean, you had millions of angels that would just like sit in an amphitheater in heaven around watching, just like, what's he going to do next? And heaven's waiting for sons of God to emerge like that again. People who will surprise. I mean, can you imagine like kids? It's kind of that picture of like babies are absolutely useless. They don't do anything for you at all. The only thing that they do is bad things. They poop, they pee, they throw up, they look at you and need you constantly. It's like you put them down, you start putting them down. You know, like there's no use. And yet we're fascinated and obsessed with babies. I mean, like you'll be in line and you'll see a man who looks like he's never talked to a child and he looks at a baby and he's like, oh, you're like, how are you doing that? That's not even your baby. And you like melt. Because life is beautiful. Because life has favor on it. Because life is a resource. Because life is something that all of us don't take for granted at our fundamental level. And a baby, even in its as they grow and they take a step, you feel like you're the first person in the world who's seen a baby take a step when it takes its first step. You're like, no baby has ever done this before, only this one. And I was here to witness it. How many of you have had that experience? When Sheree and I fell in love, we thought we were the only people who've ever fallen in love in history. We were like, no one else is really in love, only we're in love. Like, no one's love compares to our love for real. Like, we have like really good romance, so there's no way your romance even compares to ours, I'm sorry. Like, Romeo and Juliet was a baby story compared to our love, you know? And you feel that way about the decisions we make. It's like you feel like in experiencing what you're experiencing, even though billions of babies have taken their first step, your baby, there's one right there, is the most important one, right? It's like no other baby came before your baby. This is the most precious one. That's how heaven feels about you. I mean, angels don't go, they're so useless, God. I can't believe they make all these bad decisions. They look at you like, I mean, they're right there trying to endorse who you are. Because there's a spirit of love behind it. If it was just about stuff and works and things, it would never work. Angels would like stomp on you. They'd be like, you were so stupid for making that bad decision. You don't get to make a good decision again. Off with your heads. You don't make the name of Jesus worthy by the way you live your life. If it was about rules, they would have destroyed you as angels because you would have been too ugly for them because you don't follow yes enough in your heart. But because it's about love, they're like, ooh, they fell down that one time. Let's help them get up because we want to see them take their next step. Heaven's not looking at you and disqualifying you for what you're not doing. Heaven is so excited when you have that yes that's bigger than the no in your heart. We all have a little bit of unbelief. I love the scripture in Mark where the man comes up to Jesus and says, Jesus, my son is throwing himself in the fire. He's trying to drown himself. He's trying to kill himself. Can you do anything? And Jesus looks at him and says, I know who you are. You've seen me heal all these people. Why are you asking me if I can? Do you want me to do it or not? And he's trying to engage the man because the man was coming like, you know, like I'm not worthy of this. I don't know if you're going to give this to me. I don't know if you really do connect to that message of love you get. And he was being religious. He was being like a lot of us are in the church. Like, I don't know if you're really going to do anything for me, but if you can you maybe, you know, like that weird prayer that we get into where we don't engage our love, we don't engage our faith with God. And Jesus looked at him and goes, can I do it? I mean, what have you not seen me do? What are you really asking? And the man looks at him and goes, oh, heal that place in me that doesn't want to connect to you. Heal my unbelief. And he said, you can do all things, Lord. You can do this if you want to do this. Would you do this for me? And it was done. And some of us have to realize that God doesn't care about your unbelief. He cares about you saying, you can do all things. Will you do it for me? Regardless of my unbelief, regardless of what I don't feel worthy of, regardless of what I can't do for you, will you touch me? I remember one night I was in bed and all of a sudden I got a phone call and I looked at it and I thought, I need to get that. I have no idea who this is, but you know you get a feeling sometimes when people call you. And I answer it and this guy is on the phone. And he's a bajillionaire. Like he's literally a billionaire. And I'm like, why is he calling me? And he goes, hey, my son's going to be in town. He's taking my plane, one of his many planes, into town. And I just want to know if you can meet with him for an hour or two for lunch. He'll drive up to you. I feel like, you know, like I just really feel like he's at that essential place of making decisions. And can you talk to him about listening to God and making decisions? Now, here's the reality. He saw me, the billionaire, who I can call and say, hey, can I fly to your place? Your place is awesome. It's the most beautiful place. You know, it's nice to have friends with resources. But he called me as a resource because he knew that I have a gift of helping people, especially young people who've grown up around the church or grown up without their decision maker active because they've been dependent on other people, to help them to kick their butt, to make them make decisions for themselves. I help them to find their own identity and things. And so he saw that as a resource, just like you can see your friend with a boat, a resource. And he called me up out of the blue, and I thought, that's weird. There's favor with unusual opportunities that comes when you understand your resources, when you understand what your gifts are, when you understand what your usefulness is. Favor will come where people in high society, people in high political positions, people in who are famous and people who are you need in your as your part of your resource base will seek you out for your resources. The proof text, Isaiah 60, arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you. See, thick darkness covers the earth, but you will have the Spirit of God rise upon you, and your sons will come from afar, meaning people that you don't know yet will come and be adopted by you. Princes to the glory of your light. How many of you have had that happen? Kings, presidents, anybody like that ever come to you, talk to you? We have a few people in our church. We've had 18 meetings with presidents right now just in our church. Most of the people in our church who met with them where the presidents are asking them for help. Most of the people are under 25 who've met with the presidents. 18 meetings. Isn't that cool? See, when favor comes on you, it comes on you because you start to understand your identity of what you can offer. And your identity, you know, like this billionaire who called me, he didn't need another billionaire to talk to his son. He needed somebody who gets a spiritual connection, who has a spirit of counsel on them or a prophetic spirit on them. And so he called me. I became the resource person. And if I had scratched my head and said, I don't know why you're calling me. I don't have money. I don't have anything to offer you. That's what most of us do because we live in what we're not in who we are. But Jesus chose you to sit with him in heavenly places right now, and you need to get comfortable there. You need to get comfortable in that heavenly place in Ephesians 2 that he sat you in. You need to just realize that, like, instead of going, where's the title? Pastor hasn't given me the title, so I can't meet with this person. You know, like, there's no man who can give you a title above what Jesus already gave you. There's just nobody who can give you any entitlement past what heaven's already given you. And some of us are looking for that entitlement. We're looking for somebody to come and endorse us. That would be like the greatest thing. It's because we have an orphan spirit in the church, but it's not because there's not good fathers and mothers. Some of us think, well, it's just there's not good fathers and mothers. It's not because of that. It's because we won't literally give ourselves to the Father in a father-son relationship because we're dysfunctional, because we don't realize how good he is. But when you do, and there's people here who have, when you do, man, your life works. Just things work for you. When you're not looking for a man to do it, but you're looking for God to do it, your life works. There's a victim mentality in the church that says, you know, I don't have enough and I'm never going to get it. We've had some people come up to us and they'll ask for counsel. And it's just funny because, like, a lot of times people will be like, I've tried everything. I've tried to work. You know, I'm trying to be an actor and it's not working. And I had two people in one day come up to me about their acting career for prayer. And one of them, he comes up to me and, well, I'll tell you about the girl first. She comes up to me and she's like, God sent me out here to be a Hollywood actress to impact the Hollywood industry. And he sent me here and it's been so hard. And I've been here for 8 years and nothing's happened for me. And I said, well, what kind of classes are you going to? And how are you positioning yourself for your career? And she goes, I'm praying every day. Well, where do you work? Well, my parents are supporting me. She's like in her 30s. What kind of acting background do you have? God told me not to take acting lessons because he told me that there's going to be a director who will pull it out of me and it has to be pure. Have you ever done central casting to do background work or anything? No, because I'm staying pure. What kind of movies do you want to be involved with? I'm going to be involved with holy movies. And I'm looking at her like, you have the spirit of delusion on you. You become so holy that you're irreverent. You have such a wrong spirit of entitlement and victim mentality because you won't work for your job. So the same day, I prayed for her. I said, you know, here's what I'll pray for you. I'll pray that your eyes open to your responsibility because you're not living a responsible life. And she was so offended she never came back to her church, which I didn't mind because I didn't want her. I don't like people who have entitlement and victim mentality unless they want help. She didn't want help. She wanted someone to endorse the cheesy lifestyle she was living, to just have idle time, sit at home, be supported by her parents' good money who aren't rich, to be supported by them to do something that's not even really happening. Because you have to work. You have to believe in yourself, believe in what God's called you, and you have to work hard at it. I'm not entitled to ministry. That opportunities are just going to come. I have to, like, actually constantly be prepared and preparing myself and interacting. And, you know, I have to be consistent. And the young man who came up right after her the same day came up and he said, it's been really hard. I mean, I've been on this TV show, and then they canceled the show after 3 seasons, and then I got this movie, but it didn't do really well. He goes, but I have a great reputation. He goes, but I keep going to auditions, and I don't make it, and I just need prayer because I'm in 2 acting classes a week. I meet with casting clinics. I'm working as hard as I can. I know God's called me to this. I'm being as faithful as I can. Like, he's like a Daniel. He's being excellent in his craft. He goes, but I'm just kind of at a place where I'm at a low point. He has no victim mentality. He just needs love. He just needs, like, he doesn't need courage. He already has courage. He just needed somebody to come up and say, you're doing a good job. Don't grow weary in doing good. At the proper time, you'll get your harvest. And I hugged him, loved on him, said, I believe in you. And he took that to the bank. And he's fine now. But that girl, I could not do that for. I couldn't say, you're doing good. I couldn't. And there's a victim mentality because we're positioning ourselves not for favor. When you position yourselves for favor, it means that you don't expect anybody to want your life more than you want it. If I have to want your calling more than you want it, that's called a victim mentality. If your pastor needs to want your calling more than you want your calling, you're never going to get it because they can't stop their calling in their life to want yours for you. Your career, you know, if somebody has to help you, mentor you, make your career happen, you don't understand mentorship. Mentorship works best when you're already pursuing something and you need somebody to help speak into the process. Mentoring is not somebody kickstarting and making your life happen. Mentoring is not when somebody boosts or starts you. It's very rare that even most billionaires, I don't know if you know this, started from no wealth. In this generation, 75% of billionaires had no wealth. That means that there was nobody who was like, here's your leg up. You know, here's your sugar daddy. They didn't have sugar daddies. They had a brilliant idea, and they might have had mentoring, but the mentoring wasn't like, here's, you know, the first five steps you're going to take. They had to want it more than anybody else did in their life. And the favor of God comes when you understand that there's a resource inside of you that only you can access with God that other people can speak into. It's not that you have to, you know, we talked about this last night or the night before together. You have to have people in your life who are as powerful as you are in your life, but you have to be powerful in your life. You know, if you're the most powerful person in your life, you're going to fail. But if you include people in that power and you allow people to speak into your life, you'll start to operate in a higher level of favor because, you know, Sheree can say things to me and so can my best friends say things to me that will totally change my course because I have that level of respect for their voice in my life. But at the same time, I'm not looking to them to have to change my course. And there's many of us that are just waiting for our break. It's like there's a syndrome in Hollywood that I think is all over the church in the world, and that's why I'm bringing it up. We think favor comes when somebody discovers us. If I could only get discovered, I'm a prophet, but nobody ever listens to me. I'm so powerful, but nobody knows my power. You're not that powerful. No one knows your power. You weren't made to be hidden. It says in Matthew that you weren't made to be a lampstand under a bowl. You were made to shine from the highest hill you can. So if you're only shining from a little, you know, puddle jumper hill, That's as much authority as you have right now, and that's okay. You can grow in authority, but nobody can give it to you except for God. And some of us have this like false expectation that somebody's going to give us or impart to us our favor. But here's what's sad when that happens. Have you ever seen like celebrity kids? Have you ever seen pastor's kids sometimes? And I'm not talking about Carly because she's amazing or, you know, these guys are amazing. But have you ever seen like the ones who don't make it? The ones who like they're dwarfed by their parents' presence and so they become like unhealthy or child stars. Have you ever seen that? Like they're child stars and they have their miracle minute, but they don't know how to maintain it because no one actually taught them to maintain the fame and the wealth and the desire. And so all of a sudden they become dwarfed and they become weird. You understand what I'm saying? Favor and fame doesn't come when it's as far as eternal favor and fame doesn't come through inheriting it just through somebody around you. It's a blessing when you get it that way. It's a blessing when it can be a blessing when you get a leg up. But you don't need a leg up from anybody around you. It's a blessing when it comes. I love when somebody like Bill Johnson bought every single person in his church my book, Keys in His Economy. So 4,500 more people had that book. You know, I had sold over 100,000 copies at that point. When those 4,000 people bought that, another, you know, 50,000 copies sold right after that because they're all so excited about everything they read, they told everybody. That was a blessing to have Bill believe in my message and impart the message to his whole church and create. And he did the same thing for Paul with the shack, you know. And I know Paul Young really well with the shack, and it was doing well. But all of a sudden, it went to Bethel, and, like, everybody at Bethel told 25 people. It was like evangelism. They told 25 people. And that, I mean, like literally there was before it went to Bethel and after it went to Bethel as far as the explosion. Because people come from so many churches there. They have 1,400 students. So they have people from probably 1,400 churches coming there. And so if you have a book that goes through there, it can go to all those people, you know, all those churches. I mean, that's how their Jesus culture and worship music, they have thousands of churches come in every year who take their stuff. And so it was a blessing when Bill gave that to me. But, you know, I didn't need it. But I love that God gave it. I love that God used Bill. I love that God ties us to people relationally. That's part of the favor we walk in because it's about intimacy and relationship and favor that comes from us doing life together versus favor that comes just because someone likes something you do. And the kingdom is all about relationship. So when Job said, I have intimate relationship with God and I long for the days of his intimate friendship again, that's what he was defining as favor. In Job 29, I think that's beautiful because many of us think favor is when we get positioned for, you know, systematic authority. When people take me seriously as a worship leader, that's when I'll have favor. Now, when people take you seriously in friendship, they'll fight for you to be an awesome worship leader. When you start to pay a price in relationship, like we had a girl in our midst who has just been with us forever. She's awesome. And she told me, I want to be a worship leader. That's what I feel like my primary call is. Well, I've watched her walk out in our midst other things that I believed in her for. But when she said worship leader, she didn't have the strongest voice. She has an okay voice. She didn't have the strongest voice. But we have people like who are an American Idol who lead worship for us. So we have people who are like amazing. So I'm like, you don't want to grow up as a worship leader in our church. I mean, that's hard. That's like you don't, when you're not very good or you're not very skilled, you're not very gifted. are you sure you want to do this? She's like, this is my primary passion. I'm like, oh, dang it. Because relationally, I'm obligated to give her that favor because I love her, because she's faithful and everything else, because she's helped win us forward in so many areas. I have to believe in her relationally. If it was just about her gift being positioned in our church, it would have never been done. Now she's awesome. But man, there was a 2-year period where she wasn't awesome, and people are like, why are you letting her lead worship so much? You know, some of the people are like, oh, it's hard. That's hard. That's hard that you love her that much. Feels like you're soccer momming for her a little bit. I'm like, yeah, I am. Because I love her that much. Because she told me this is what she wants to do, and she's my family. And so I'm going to allow her to do this because I believe in her calling. Yeah, her favor with me is giving her this position. You're right. And people are like, that's not fair. I'm like, well, you do what, you know, the God encounter I had about her life, she's like one of my spiritual daughters or sisters or whatever, the God encounter I've had about her and the way that she's been faithful in that relationship to me and even helped us in so many ways birth what we've been birthing. She's the one who named our ministry Expression 58. God gave her the name. And God's had her walk in, there's a loyalty and a faithfulness that I have in my heart towards her that's going to birth a different level of opportunity because her faithfulness and because of the relationship integrity she has. And so you can come here and be way more gifted than her, but if you don't win my heart, you're never going to have the favor she has. And people are like, I don't know how to get that kind of favor, because most of us don't spend time in a relational equity. We spend time in a work ethic equity. You know, we don't have equity in our spiritual houses. That's why when you leave one church, some of you are transplants from another church, you didn't come with the equity. You could have been the youth pastor there. You could have been the head usher there. You could have been whatever you are there. And you come to a new church, and in the church, we don't know how to transfer that equity. But you know what you can transfer? Relational equity everywhere you go. If you're good at relationship when you can get into a new church, you'll automatically start having that same level of relationship. It's kingdom. You may not have the same position, but you'll have that kind of relationship. Most churches, you have to jump through hoops to get into position, unless you go in through a relational route. And I don't just mean becoming best friends with the pastors, because that's not how it works. You know, let's be friends with all leaders and then we'll become a leader. No, be faithful in the relationships that God gives you and he'll promote you. The light of God will shine on you and people won't be able to help but listen to you because they'll trust your relational heart. I think I just want to read one scripture out of Philippians, which I'm wondering if you use for your Shine series. Philippians 2, verse 15. So that you may be blameless and pure children of God, who are faultless in a crooked and perverted generation, among whom you shine like stars to the world. You know why you shine like stars to the world? Because the world's asking some big questions. They're asking, what does mature love look like in marriage? My parents are divorced. My uncles are divorced. My aunts are divorced. I don't know what mature love looks like in marriage. How do marriages stay together? And your marriages or your friends' marriages or your church's marriages that are shining right now are like a bright beacon, like a lighthouse in a dark night of cloudiness. People are asking, like, how do you deal with children? Like, our behavior and our children is so hard to deal with, and your family is put together. You know, and I remember, like, we had this lady, her and her husband were going through a divorce next door, and we were on Air Force Base, and my parents just took in people all the time and helped people through their marriage problems and stuff. And so she came, and she was staying with us for a couple nights because it got really bad at her house. And they weren't Christians. They didn't have a context of Christianity to stay with us. They just loved our family and my parents' relationship. That everyone trusted my mom and dad's relationship. My parents are totally in love. They are like almost like a symbiotic being in a codependent way. Like, I remember watching them one day, and I was like, you guys finish each other's, like, not sentences. You guys finish each other's, like, movement. They're in the kitchen, and my mom's, like, going over to get something out of the drawer, and my dad hands it to her magically, like, here you go, my love. Talk about ESP. They, like, literally read each other's thoughts. They cook together, and, like, they're, like, finishing each other's thoughts with salt and pepper. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is, like, either cute or gross. This is too much. You know, like, you guys have been together too long. This is, like, you know everything about each other too much. But they love each other that much, and so people would respect this. So this woman's staying with us and just for a couple nights, and so my mom asked her if she wanted to come to church with us. And her husband wouldn't let her bring the kids, but she wanted to come, and so he had the kids. And so she gets in our van. We had like one of those big old huge vans at the time, not like a minivan, but the big real vans, and which I thought was the coolest thing when I was like 8 or 9 when this happened. And I was in the back seat. I usually got the whole back seat, but my sister Jennifer had to sit with me at that time. And I was in a bad mood. Jennifer was in a bad mood. Cindy, my other sister, was in a bad mood. And my mom was ticked. She woke up, and we were all taking way too long to get ready. And we had what we call the Sunday morning family time, which means we fought one out of every four Sundays on the way to church. We just did. And we never fought about anything real. We just fought about where we're going to eat or whatever. Cindy took too long in the bathroom. She took an hour to get ready. No matter what. It just was ridiculous. And we had one bathroom for three kids. I took 5 minutes to get ready. And Cindy would like take all the way. And then she'd always be 10 minutes late. So my mom was yelling at her. Not really. But just like, rah, 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 you know, the bickering kind of yelling. Not like the abusive kind of yelling. And we're going back and forth. And all of a sudden we're fighting as a family. All of us are like, we're going here for lunch. No, blah, blah. You always get your way. Blah, blah, blah. And the woman starts crying. And we all look at her like, uh-oh, we broke her. Oh, no. We're going to church, and we've completely modeled anti-Christianity to her the entire way to church, and we are an awful family. You know, like, that's just where we're at in our hearts. And we're like, my mom's like, I'm so sorry. We're not usually this way. Well, we are on Sundays, but, like, we don't always – well, we kind of always do this, but we really love each other, and we're really sorry. We're sorry, right, kids? You know, like, and we're like, yes, we're sorry. We're really sorry. She's just weeping, and she's like, no, it's so beautiful. We're like, huh? Ruh-roh, you know, what do you mean it's beautiful? And so she's like, it's so beautiful. I've never fought with my parents.